Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cullen.
You're listening to the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast for the needleworkers.
We are needleworkers. We're not stabbing ground cloth this week?
No, I'm feeling kind and generous and friendly, so we're going to be needleworkers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, yesterday, tearing apart a shower downstairs to have it redone. Yeah, we'd have been stabbing. But no, today feeling pretty good. So there we have it. Okay, so a couple of things. Remind people that we have the FiberTalk needle minders on the FiberTalk site at the /shop page. And 1-inch needle minders, those are 2-inch needle minders. 1-inchers are coming within the next couple of weeks, so you'll have a choice of sizes.
I am now the proud owner of a FiberTalk needle minder. And when I next have something to that I can post a picture of, you just might be seeing it on display on a project. So
there we go. There we go.
Yes.
Yeah, Margo was saying the magnets on those are strong.
Yes, they are. Yes.
And so you got to pay attention. But then Margo was saying, because Margo's been doing all the mailing, so she's had to deal with these magnets that seem to attract each other from a mile away. But she says, can we go to weaker magnets? And I said, actually, as strong as they are when they're around their ilk, you know, a stack of 10 magnets is powerful. I said, when you put them on a needle minder and then put them with a piece of cloth and then put needles on, I think they're just a nice firm grab. So I said, no, we're not going to weaker magnets. Because I hate needle minders where they're barely holding the needle. You know what I mean? And and then where'd my needle go? And so I think they're strong, but I think once they're all put together on a piece, they're just about right.
Well, now, I haven't tested this out, but will you also hold a chart or even a pair of scissors?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And see, I tested them on needlepoint canvas. So to me, that was the extreme. If they'll hold and do a good job on needlepoint canvas, then they'll do the job on anything. And they'll hold scissors, a laying tool, whatever. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, because that was the other test is, you know, because I know some people like to put their laying tool or their scissors right there. So 1-inchers coming. That magnet won't be as strong because they can't be as big. Coming up. But, $15, postage included on the website.
Excellent.
And then we have the Queen Sampler. And Vonna and I will be doing another update here this week sometime, end of the week, obviously, since this will be on Wednesday. End of the week, a Queen Sampler update. Vonna has been cooking right along. I'm now in catch-up mode. I wasn't going to stitch it reversibly.
But then Vonna
had to decide to meet the challenge. So then, and once she started that, then I couldn't do them, without being reversible. So it's a mental thing. It's not hard. It's just a mental thing. You got to remember there's a backside you're trying to make work too. And I've worked the doodle cloth over quite a bit. And I've started stitching on the actual cloth, and I keep having to turn it over just to make sure that I haven't lapsed into some habit, you know? So.
Now, is it like a problem or an issue or in any way that you have both Queen Sampler and Sarah Brazier going on at the same time, like two big projects? I don't know. I'm not a two big projects at a time kind of person. And I need to hear your thoughts on this.
Not a problem other than working on the Queen Sampler. I found myself last night wanting to pick up Sarah and just make simple X's just for a mental escape.
Got it.
That was the thing, you know, because, and then having worked so long on Sarah, then that habit of making X's all the same all the time, you can't do that. especially with a reversible cross stitch. And I, you know, more than once I've flipped it over and gone, oh, you got to be kidding me. This, you know, these don't look right. And then I realized I just lapsed into, I was watching TV, lapsed into mindless cross stitching. And yeah, no, I can't do that. You got to pay attention until it gets to be kind of ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vanna said that after a while it was, she finally got her mind was thinking subconsciously what's going on in the back when I do this. And then that's when she started to really move. So yeah, not tough, but yeah, Ivana had to do it. She had to go, I'm doing this reversible. I'm going to learn how. I was like, oh. Yeah.
Well, dare I suggest on a day that you're feeling stabby, maybe that's not a good day to work on the Queen Sampler.
Oh, that's that. I got that advice already from myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah, no, maybe. I've given myself that advice. Yeah, this is not your day for this. No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
No. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's good, you know, that was the whole purpose, though. It's a good challenge. It's, mm-hmm. It's a test, stretch you, stretch the techniques, you know, just make you do something different. So, it's cool. Vanna's got that top band almost done, and I think it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. All reversed, and she flips that over, and yeah, the letters are backwards, but boy, they're the letters right there. She's got it nailed, so. I got to catch up.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
It's, this project, Vaughn is going to be leading the way?
For a short while.
We'll see. We'll see.
For a short while, she's going to lead the way, yes. And you know, maybe I'm going to be smart and just let her lead the way the whole way and let her be the one that breaks the new ground. Maybe I'll just do that.
Oh, that's your strategy, huh?
No. I really want to kind of stay even so that we're talking about the same thing all the time. So
now is the whole thing isn't reversible, is it?
No.
It's just certain bands that
Right.
Okay.
Some of it can't be, and then the bottom third is all white work, so
okay.
Yeah, not. So anyway. Working on it, having fun. If you're interested, lots of people have purchased the kit from Sassy Jacks. So go to Sassy Jacks. Kim has kits and I think has gotten a new load of charts. So they're available. There's one thread, miliary, gold miliary or something that is not available anywhere. And I think it's Krynek. Ooh, I shouldn't say that, but I think it is. Anyway, she has contacted the manufacturer, and they're making more. So there'll be a delay, but that doesn't come till the end anyway, so don't worry about it. But all the silks are available. Kim has the kits, so you can get them from her at the prices I've mentioned, which I didn't bring my notes. But anyway, she has a kit with some discounts on thread and linen, and she can get it right out to you. Lots of people doing it, and it's kind of fun. Some people way ahead of us, but that's okay. That's part of it. Not a stitch along. It's a stitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, fun. Fun, a good test. But, yeah, I exactly. No, you hit it on the head. Last night it was, I think I'm just going to take Sarah out and just make X's for a while.
And we all have those days where you need to be doing something that's a little bit more on the mindless end whether it's I just need to be filling in background on this particular day. I need to I need to be working on an area where I don't even have to follow a pattern.
Yep.
Where I could just be, my mind needs to rest because it's been that kind of day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See you, and you've done the variety of things like I have and exactly that. Yeah. Give me a corner somewhere where I can just mindlessly fill it in. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need that. Yep. Oh, you know the deal. Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. So that's, so we'll have an update sometime this week. And then, like I've said, we've said many times, follow Fiber Talk and, Vanna Pfeiffer on Instagram, because that's where we're posting. Vanna more than me lately, but coming up more for me. Where we're posting updates kind of on an ongoing basis in addition to the shows that we do. And Yes, and the official name, the Queen's Sampler Project, sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. Really appreciate Kim supporting this by sponsoring it and also by making kits available. So with a little discount on there to help you out, because there's a lot goes into this thing. So appreciate Sassy Jack's doing all that. And Linda Vinson, the catalyst who started this mess, going to do a show with her too. We're going to have a show with her coming up. Yeah. Fun.
Yes.
So there'll be that. And then this Sunday will be the second Sampler Sunday. And that will again be Vaughn and I. We're going to do a video this time. We did one video and now we got to do another one. So we're going to do a video. So you'll be able to actually see the samplers. And then Sassy Jack's is offering the same 15% on the kits for the samplers we talk about.
Mm.
And so that'll be Sunday. And then you have coming up your retreat, which sadly paying job stuff's gotten in the way and I can't go to, and I'm really disappointed about that. But
I'm disappointed too as well. But yep. Yes, coming up next week, the New Jersey Floss Tube Retreat. I am so excited for this. A little nervous, but mostly excited. Defining Floss Tube Retreat to be anyone a part of the Floss Tube community. And that means, sure, those that make videos, but really those who watch videos and comment on videos are part of the Floss Tube community as well. So that is just a question that I've gotten from some folks. Do you have to make videos to go to this retreat? And the answer is no. You need to know what Floss Tube is and to be a part of the community in some way by watching some videos and wanting to be a part by commenting and knowing some folks. So
basically there's no requirement other than sign up, because if you can't watch a video, come on.
Exactly. We have folks coming in from 22 different states. Over a year ago, when I was planning the first one of these, or 2 years ago, I should say, the idea that, well, this will be great to have one on the East Coast, thinking it would basically attract East Coasters. And so sure enough, yes, a lot of people are from the East Coast, but there are people coming in from the West Coast and the Midwest and the South and basically all around the country, as well as a handful of Canadians are coming down for this. So we are excited, a little over 100 people. I have just been thrilled with the support and just the interest. I mean, the size of my waiting list from day one gives you a sense of just how excited people have been. I think there have been all kinds of retreats that have been around, certainly in the last few years, of the idea of stitchers wanting to get together and be with one another. I am in the last, week and a half or so before it happens, I'm doing all the nitty gritty things like assembling bags and putting together. I'm having raffle prizes. I'll just take a moment and say a huge thank you. I've got donations that have been coming in particularly, I'll say thanks to some companies, Weeks Dye Works and Krynick and Gentle Arts, Sulky Threads, Victorian Motto Sampler Shop, have all been companies that have donated to this retreat, as well as quite a number of individuals, that just goes to show you the support that's here in the stitching community when a large company, large for our stitching community company, like Weeks, like Krynick, like Gentle Arts, Sulky, all these that say, yes, we want to be a part. Here's something to help make it that much better. The raffle that I'm doing is going to be supporting a local no-kill animal shelter, and that's just a cause that's near and dear to my heart. And it's just wonderful that a number of retreats lately have had a charity component to them, and you could just see stitchers who really care about helping one another and helping the communities that they're visiting. So I am just so excited for everything to all come together, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Yep. Well, I'm sure it was going to be good. I'm disappointed I can't be there, because there's a lot of people you're going to have there that I wanted to meet, but next time. That is a cool thing, and I think that really speaks to the needlework community. Is you do raffles and you do these things, and it could very easily become, I want to make money, profit, money grab thing. And we see it time and again, and you're an example of that, where you're having a raffle, and you could have a raffle and you could keep that money, and no one would think less of you or look sideways or anything. But to take that and give that to an animal shelter, and those animal shelters always need funds. Mm-hmm. It just speaks to the community, because we see it time and again that it's not always what money can I take out of this, but how can I take this money and do some good with it? And I just think it really says a lot about the community as a whole. It's really great.
Yeah, no, it is. It's wonderful that there's the caring and the support that's out there for it. And a bunch of people that are looking forward to having a good time together.
Yep. Now you have a Facebook group. What is the name of that?
It is, I always get this wrong. Floss Tube Retreat.
You made it.
I did, but I forget whether I put New Jersey first or last. And I'm pretty sure it's Floss Tube Retreat, New Jersey. That's, yes, Floss Tube Retreat, New Jersey.
Okay, so people can go there and at least get a flavor of what's going on then.
Yes.
On Facebook. So that's good, because it's always fun to see pictures of Stitchers and see if you recognize anyone. Mm-hmm. And see what goes on. Yay. Well, good for you.
Yep. Looking forward to it very much.
Yep. Going to be fun, I'm sure. Yep. All right. We're going to play a little, well, not a game, but.
A challenge,
yes. Called You Have to Choose. So we put together a bunch of things. And, okay, so here's the ground rules. Money and time are no object. Okay.
Okay.
So for all these things, so money and time are no object.
Mm-hmm.
And so but in many of these, we have to make a choice, one, the other, or choose from a group of things and then explain why. So, yeah, the answer can't be time or money, because those are no object.
Okay.
And I say that, and then I look down and hear one of these, that's exactly what I wrote down. So. So maybe we won't ask that one, or maybe we won't, time we get to it, I'll have an answer. How's that?
Yeah, I'm curious to know which one you're referring to. So,
well, we'll see how it comes out, because, Okay. So you start. Okay. Just anyone from the list.
Pick anything from this list?
Anything from the list. Don't have to go in order.
Oh.
Because, well, you know, that would be like boring. So.
Well, all right. Well, I'll go silk or cotton.
Silk.
Tell me why.
Okay, silk, because the more I've worked with it and become familiar with it, the more I like it, and the more I'm getting comfortable manipulating it, and I love the sheen. And it just really has a nice feel. And I went back, and the reason I put this down, I had a reason for this one, was I working on the Queen Sampler and working on the doodle cloth. I used, I certainly wasn't going to use silk to, you know, to tear out and throw away. So I got out some DMC, and I had a couple spools of sulky thread. And I was surprised at how, and this is the wrong word, but it's the word that hit my head, how coarse they are. In comparison to silk, because I had not used DMC in some time. And coarse is really not the right word. They're not as smooth, because they're not silk. But then I thought, wait a minute, that's not a negative, because they have a nice grab to them. And they're stiffer. And so I felt like I, again, had to change my tension. And so that it was. So I'm doing this on the doodle cloth, and then I went back to the silk on the actual thing, and had to shift back. So it was an interesting, just a little subtle experience. And that sulky thread—that's the first I'd tried it, because I got a couple spools when I was at Sassy Jack's. Just grabbed a couple, you know, just to test it. That has potential.
Yeah.
Just playing with, that's all I've done is just play with it on a doodle cloth. Oh man. That's got a nice, it lays nice and looks good and just has a nice, it stitches well. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but still silk. I just, I've become an addict. Yeah. So, all right, for you.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've certainly used individual silk at individual times, I don't know how much I've used a whole lot of silk. Like you said that you've been using silk a lot lately.
Right.
Is Sarah Brazier, are you doing her in silk?
All silk, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So like I don't have in my repertoire a large project that I have done all in silk that I've worked on for, you know, extended period of time and then returned to cotton and could say I can feel and notice the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things that I wish that I could sit down and play with more, you know, because I know everyone, many people talk about that silk has so many wonderful qualities to it. And I haven't experienced the best of the best qualities that now, but granted, you said money is no object in this conversation.
Right, right.
So it's hard for me to like continue this sentence because where I was going with to justify the cost of it, you know. I just did a small project where I was using a Belsoise silk because it was something I had on hand, and I had it on hand from a project that I did, which was we'll call it a medium-sized project that I had done in silk just because it was the color that I wanted and needed, and it only came in silk, so to speak. And I need more experience to be 100% convinced. I feel like there's enough people out there that have that experience that will tell me, oh yeah, Arlene, you'll be convinced if you can use silk more that silk is the way to go. I haven't experienced enough of it yet.
Yeah. Well, see, I say I really like it, and that's what I would choose if I had to choose. But I say that, and I don't mean to say one's better than the other. They're just different.
Yep. I noticed that Nicola and Kathy from Needle in a Haystack put out a video, and part of that was some silk sample. You could get a special silk sampling. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm not describing this correctly. And I'm sort of tempted to get one of those sample packages to really try out all the silks that are out there. Cause that's the kind of thing that I love is, you know, give me a whole grouping of samples of something. Let me stitch up something. Let me really feel the difference. I mean, it's interesting. I could talk to you about the differences of cotton versus silk versus actually linen threads in bobbin lace and distinct differences in design and choice in there. But in needlework, I just feel like I don't have enough experience to say love one over the other. For me, it's all about color. It's like this project that I recently finished using Belsoise and indigo. That indigo thread is one of my, that's the color name. That is one of my favorite threads to use. And just because it happens to be a silk, that's almost beside the point.
Yeah, because it just delivered the color that you wanted.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well, for me, it's become, I just enjoy the silk. But it's also become, for me, an exercise, and I'm really enjoying this, an exercise in adjusting tension. And maybe I'm making a whole lot more out of this than should be. And, and veterans are going, oh, please spare me. But I just have been really studying as I've gone along, studying my tension with different threads on different ground cloths.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, as you know, with needlepoint on canvas, on 18-point canvas, you can give the thread a pretty good tug.
Mm-hmm.
And should, in most instances, give it a good tug to make it behave right and to have the right look. I tend to want to do that. And obviously on 40-count linen, you don't want to do that because it'll just collapse the linen threads. And so I've been learning to find that right tension that makes the stitches sit properly and not create holes. But then don't, you know, they're not floppy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had that experience with the doodle cloth when I went to DMC and Sulky, and it was a different behavior. So then I actually found myself for a half hour there just stitching, making X's on the doodle cloth just to see what happened with the tension. And so for me, it's just been one of those mental exercises that I'm working on aside from doing the stitching is adjusting that tension and then looking at, all right, what thread do I have? What ground cloth do I have? And then what is the best tension for that? And then can I do it consistent?
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's just what goes through my weird little head. So,
okay, you pick one on this list.
This is the first one because you and I both have this problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can only do one needlework technique. Somebody's going to come along and take all the others away.
I was afraid you were going to choose that one. So that, see, and I sort of feel like my gut answer to that has got to be counted canvas work, because I can sort of sneak in the other techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can sneak in cross stitch.
Yep.
On counted canvas work. You could sneak in embroidery stitches on counted canvas work. You can certainly do all the cool canvas work stitches on counted canvas work. You can do geometric things on counted canvas work, but you can also do very figural things. So, you know, that's, and frankly, it's like being a little sneaky because it sort of covers such a wide range of things. I think it's how I'm going to answer.
Okay. See, and that was the first question, and because I knew for you you'd be torn a little bit because just about all of your design work is cross stitch.
Yes, absolutely.
See, and so I wondered how you would answer.
Well, and so here's the thing is that I think so much in terms of grids, you know, cross stitch, counted canvas, it's all on a grid. And I cross stitch was my first love. I learned about needlework, using needlework as the general term, that I came into this world because of cross stitch. But my world expanded because I learned about counted canvas work. And then all these other things, you know, hardanger and black work and all these others sort of came into play. And I just think, well, how, you know, it's sort of like the genie in the lamp and you get three wishes and one of your wishes is I want 10 wishes. Like that's how I'm trying to play this game here. But yes, it's hard. Because I know that there's so many other techniques, I feel like saying cross stitch limits me too much. But if I say counted canvas work, I actually get other things in there, including cross stitch.
Right. And see, my answer is the same thing for the same reasons.
Uh-huh.
It's counted canvas work because I can do a Debbie Rowley piece or a Curdy Biggs piece with all the geometric blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you can do all those other things and you can sneak them in. You can sneak in some hardanger like things as long as you don't cut the ground cloth, but you can get those looks in there. You can get just about any look in there, black work,
mm-hmm.
on a counted canvas thing,
mm-hmm.
and harder to do in the others and stay true to the technique, or even in many instances, to make the design work.
Yes. Now, am I right in saying that you came into the needlework world through needlepoint, through
right.
tent stitch needlepoint?
Painted canvas, tent stitch, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that is not your love right now, the painted canvas world.
Okay. No. Matter of fact, I haven't done one in a long time. And I've mentioned more than once, I have a couple of them that I don't get inspired to. you know, and it just doesn't work for me. What works for me is the charted canvas thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I love sitting down with those things. I love the symmetry, the balance, the things you can do, the textures you can get in, and painted canvas people who are really good at it can do all of those things.
Sure.
Not the symmetry, but I mean, I was looking the other day at some painted canvas stuff and hit a vein of really talented painted canvas people. And you just sit there and your jaw just drops.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they just bring them to life. The people who are really good at it, absolutely bring them to life. They know what to do with the color. They know what to do with the stitches to bring dimension and texture and feel. And it's amazing talent that those people have. I don't have that talent. But for me, it's the charted canvas work. I just enjoy that. I enjoy the, you know, do some Jessica stitches and then go over here and do some road stitches and bring it all together. And I mean, I'm very weak when it comes to color, and even I can see in a lot of those how I would change the colors to have something that's more appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more approachable in that way. So, but yeah, that's what I learned was needlepoint, painted needlepoint with wool. Yeah, just about all basket weave, or maybe a couple of weird stitches in the actual design. And then, of course, you know, all the background's basket weave, like, oh, put me to sleep, just shoot me in the head, you know. And that was a time I didn't realize what a challenge it is to do basket weave well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. And so my basket weave never looked, it just always looked like kind of semi-good. And it was much later that I learned that, oh, there's a lot of technique to that to get a field of basket weave to look like it should. And I had a lot of pieces with no background finished. I just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. So, yeah. But that's no same reason for me. I just feel like I can get these other techniques that I enjoy in on that charted canvas, in addition to just what's there. And boy, there's so many really talented charted canvas people out there too. I mean, there's just all kinds of them. And would you agree that if you wanted to try needlepoint, that's the better spot to try than painted canvas? You know, money's no object, you know, because that's the first complaint. Painted canvas is so expensive. Well, go paint one and then you'll realize why it's so expensive. Yeah. But set that aside, would you agree that if you're going to try needlepoint, a small 6x6 inch charted canvas is the easiest entry point?
Well, to me, it goes back to when you ask that question, what are you defining as needlepoint? Because I can picture a small 6x6 painted canvas of something that you love, if you love cats or chickens or whatever, and you just want to, you don't want to have to look at a chart, you don't want to have to follow directions, but you love the idea of filling in color that's already prepared, it's already on the canvas for you. That's going to appeal to one type of person. Another type of person is going to be way more excited about, here's a blank slate, here's a blank piece of canvas, and you're going to do different types of stitches. Not the most complex ones if you're learning something new, but you're going to do a few different things on this blank, but you're going to have to follow, here's some pieces of paper that have some instructions. And I think that's going to be two different, that's going to appeal in different ways. And so it's really going to depend on what a person is looking for. Or even teaching a kid, you know, little kids' needlepoint kits are in effect painted canvases. They're, you know, printed or, you know, whatever the cheapest way it is to get the image on that stuff. But that's because so the kid can just focus right what's in front of them. And that's, you know, whatever age. I mean, that's, again, I think it really would depend on what you're most interested. I mean, for me, it's always been the blank slate. I'm creating something that on top of something that was blank has always appealed to me. But for some people, that's almost the opposite of what it would appeal to them. So it would really depend.
Okay. And you know what just popped into my head as you were saying that?
What?
That thing that we as me, a former teacher, you as a current teacher, always have to be aware of is that the classroom has a bunch of people who learn in different ways.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
So the people, you know, and that would be an interesting survey.
Mm-hmm.
Do the people who like to read and learn from the written instruction tend toward charted canvas or cross stitch?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who learn visually tend toward painted canvas? You know, that would be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah.
On a survey.
Mm-hmm. You could, like, break down the nuances of, do you like following instructions? Do you like, following diagrams? Do you like those kinds of things? And, I don't want to limit to artistic sides, but just the idea of all the colors of something already being prepared for you and you're, in effect, covering it up or working on top, right on top of it.
Right.
Well,
yeah, and you would ask that same question. So like if you would start out the survey, some way to discover what their orientation was, and I'm basically an artist, or I'm art, I have an artistic visual view of the world, and then to see their stitching, because even simple cross stitch, are those people ones who tend to take a cross stitch pattern and start doing things with it other than what's prescribed? Are they the ones who tend to do that more than someone who reads instructions and executes? I think that'd be fun study to do.
Yeah. I think there's all types out there, and it'd be interesting to see what type of stitcher you are and how that corresponds to the other parts of your life.
Yep.
If there is a if you're someone who likes to change the colors and likes to change the fabrics and likes to change everything in a cross stitch pattern that has been handed to you with a picture of a model on the front, but you like to change everything, how does that connect with other things, the way you do things, the way you learn things, other parts of your life, what kind of job you have or what have you? It'd be interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, as an educator, you know that's what it's going to come back to, those three basic things: people who learn visually, learn by hearing, and learn by reading.
Yep.
You know it's going to come back to that in some form if you can construct the survey properly.
Yeah.
Huh. And so, but that, as a designer, you do that. I'm sure you do that without even thinking about it. But as a designer, keeping that in mind is going to broaden your customer base or your fan base, if you would.
Yes, because there are so many times where I am working on something where I just want to, like, and I try to write this into my patterns all the time, in effect, just because the picture on the front has it in this color, you are no means required to do it in this color.
Right.
We're really trying to encourage, use whatever color thread and fabric, sings to you. Just because, wait, is it my turn or your turn? And I'm going to totally relate this.
I think it's your turn, so go for it.
Okay, because the next question is going to
You have a transition. Go for it.
Well, color, you go to great lengths to avoid, because I will tell you when it comes back to me what color you will never see in a pattern of mine, but that in a picture that I produce for a pattern of mine. But hey, if you are doing one of my patterns and you choose to put it in the pattern because you love that color, go for it. That's what I one thing that always gets me.
What's the color?
Well, wait, you have to answer first. That's what.
I have to. So the one I would avoid.
Yes. What is the color you avoid?
Green.
Is there
green?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you have like lots of trees and things like that you're stitching right now on Sarah?
Yes. And I just follow the colors because that's I want it to look like that.
Okay.
No, I'm pretty sure I know why, though I don't do it consciously. is I have typical male red-green color blindness. And of course, every time I mention that, it starts a freak show. What color is this? What color is that? You know, and I just hate that. And so, you know, because
we're doing a podcast and not a video right now, so I'm not going to do that to you.
Thank you. Well, I wouldn't play along anyway because I long ago quit playing along.
Okay.
Well, see, the way I found out, I mean, this becomes a story now, but the way I found out was in freshman biology class in high school. And the biology teacher was the track coach. You know, Mr. Muscles, gung-ho, blah, blah, blah. And so one day he was holding up those charts. We were talking about human anatomy and vision and how cones and rods work and all that stuff. And he was holding up the charts, and I'd never seen them. You know, the circles with the balls all inside, and then there's a number or a letter or whatever. And so he would hold them up, and, you know, and the class would shout out 32 or 14 or 16. I wasn't seeing, like some I'd see, but a lot of them I was not seeing. Mm-hmm. And stupid me, I raised my hand and I said, "What are you guys talking about?" Well, you know, typical coach, you know, absolutely no sensitivity whatsoever. A hush falls over the room. And guess who gets to go to the front of the room and be the guinea pig? And so he starts flipping through these things. And I don't see him. You know, I just don't see. And he knew what the problem was. Because he's an adult male and who knew red-green color blindness. And he knew. And so he started flipping through them. And I swear he was having a great time having me look at these circles where I couldn't see anything. And then he pronounced, "You have red-green color blindness," to the class. And, of course, you know, as a freshman, you know how vulnerable and sensitive you are to anything that makes you abnormal. And so, you know, thanks, coach. You know, appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. But see, it starts the freak show because if you show me a picture of a green tree, I can tell it's green. Mm-hmm. If you show me a red fire engine, you know, it's red. If you show me a purple grape, you know, that's purple. I can tell those things. It's when you get into the shades and the nuanced colors that I really have trouble. And greens start to look not green to me. And so that color frustrates me. So I know that's why I avoid it. Unless somebody says, use these colors here. And then I can tell in the context that they're green. But if you lay them out, sometimes I struggle to tell if they're truly a green or if they're a brown or whatever it might be, because when you get into the shades, it gets really blurry for me. And oranges, reds and oranges, you start to get more toward the orange, I have trouble. Because it's like it could be a dirty yellow, or it could be, oh, kind of an orange, but not really. But then I learn it's actually a red, it's just a different red. And you know how many reds there are. And so I struggle with that. And that's why then the other question I had, your favorite base color, that's why my favorite color is blue. I know it is. Because I can work with blues and everything that relates or contrasts to blues and be confident. And even into the purples, I'm pretty confident until you start to get a lot of red in a purple, and then I start to struggle. But if I stay in that blue range and then everything that works against it or with it, I'm comfortable. And so I know that's why it becomes my favorite color. And I know that's why most of my clothes are blues or variations of, because I'm comfortable and I can put them together and know that when I walk out, I'm not going to look like some freak show. And it all stems back to that coach who embarrassed me, you know. And so that's where I end up with that. And a lot of these designs, I know there are some designs that I just turn down visually because there's lots of reds and greens, and it just is not a clear set of colors to me. And so then I'll go to, all right, what is the pattern? And then how would that look to me in blues? And then I see something and I go, yeah, there, now I want that. Yeah. So that's my long story for how I end up with that thing. But yeah, can I tell green? Sure, I can tell green. But it's, and I think that's the case for most males, is it's not, can you identify green grass? Yes, of course I can. but it's the subtleties, and to the point where and I catch myself even doing these podcasts. I know I don't refer to colors specifically as a defense mechanism, because I've been corrected so many times through the years. No, that's not. That's green. Or no, that's not. That's tan. You know, I've just been corrected so many times that I just avoid it because, you know, none of us likes to be wrong. And
sure.
So that's what happens to me. So there's, sorry. There's your psychologist couch.
No, it's so really those two questions that you put on here about color, basically favorite base color for a design and color you go to great lengths to avoid, are really coming from your own like deep psychological places of color and how it's played out in your life because of red green color blindness.
Right, but it also is. I wanted to hear from you.
Yes,
as someone who has a very strong color orientation.
Yes.
How that works in your head. Because, see, that's the curiosity that I have. How does that work in your head where color is not an issue?
Okay, well, interesting. So the color that I don't like, and I don't have a story of why I don't like it, I just don't, is the color orange. That it's just never appealed to me. And I can't tell you why that is. I just, like, I don't own any orange clothing. I just don't. And I avoid stitching with it. And to the point where, and what the very clear story I could tell with it, stitching story related with it, a very large piece that I've shared in the past, a big canvas work piece, which is basically a color study that I was doing four times, with different base color. And then each square was, one square had a monochrome theme. One of them was a complementary theme. One was split complementary. There was using color theory terms. And so, in all of that playing around with the color wheel, especially because I was doing it four times, it's kind of hard to avoid any one color in this whole giant project. But you can bet that I was doing everything I could to avoid orange, that in this piece, there's literally only two or three small areas where orange came into play because I was just trying to avoid it. I'll use orange in a figural stitching when it's needed, but it's just not a color that I go to at all. And I won't, like, if I'm working on a design that I'm looking for something just to start out on a computer generated picture, and then I may later on say, yes, what am I going to stitch this in? Certainly it'll never be an orange. And what will I almost naturally go to will be the blues and the purples.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where actually what I'm working on right now, which I did briefly, I showed it in my last floss tube video. I really kind of questioned myself, like, really, I'm stitching in this, it's a different thread, but it's really in this color scheme again, in a periwinkle blue color scheme. But then it really came down to, if I'm stitching something, I have to love what I'm doing. And I could never love stitching in orange. I could enjoy stitching in green or stitching in some other colors. But the blues and the purples are just the colors that I sort of naturally gravitate to. And when I'm thinking about patterns that I'm designing myself, and when I'm thinking about I'm stitching this as a model that'll get used in one way, shape, or form, I feel like I need to think about balance of my overall collection of patterns. And at the same time, I'm also thinking, but I just want to stitch what I enjoy. And, you know, that kind of has to win sometimes, because again, I make it very clear in what I write with my patterns, you know, this is what happens to be on the front of this, but you are in no way expected to use the colors that you see on the front. Like, when I hear people in a floss tube video and they talk about the called for,
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I, I mean, I get it. That's just the phrase that's used, but there's a side of it that just wants to say, no, that's just what's written on the pattern. That doesn't mean that it has to be that. It's not called for doing that. You can do it in anything you want.
Right. Well, that's what I love about Debbie Rowley's charts is she always has a table. These are the colors that the model is. And then there's another column for these are your colors.
Yep.
And I find it interesting that two designers that I have talked to for several hours, you and Debbie Rowley, and her least liked color is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And that you would both have colors in that end of the spectrum.
Yep, I'm not too big a fan of yellow either, I'll tell you
okay,
that.
Okay, all right, so that it does spill over to that then.
Oh,
okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is it because it hits your eyes? It's irritating to your eyes. What reaction does your body have when you see it? Or your mind, not your body, but your mind. You know what I mean? Is it like, ugh?
You know, that's a good question. I don't, maybe it's, I know it's a color that doesn't look good on me. Maybe it's a color that, I find jarring. I just don't know. I mean, you think about a bright sunny, like a bright sun, and that's a nice image. I'm trying to think of an orange, like the fruit, an orange. That's a nice image. But I just it like when I have the choice of like. I'm picturing being in a needlework store where you have the full, you know, a whole wall of threads in front of you. Those oranges, just those yellows, that whole area of the color wheel. I don't know. I wish I could give you a better answer, but.
So when you walk up to that wall of threads, you almost want to put your hand up to cover up that section and move away from it.
Yes. Unless there's a need for it, if right. I need to.
Oh, understood. Yeah. Understand that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But yes, I would move away from that. You know, I've seen some pictures of some stores that have like the whole store is organized by color. And I just would not even be stepping foot near the orange and yellow area, which is kind of a neat idea that you could just stay away from the whole area that just doesn't appeal to you. You know, it just is what it is, I guess. I mean, I think. I don't want to make it sound like I'm taking a least favorite color to some crazy extreme. I mean, we all have likes and dislikes when it comes to colors. I don't know what it is about those colors that just don't appeal.
Yeah, no, I don't think that at all. Because like for me, it's not like I hate green.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind green, but if I can avoid it, I'll avoid it. Or, you know, reds, they're okay, but I don't jump up and down, but, you put a bunch of blues in front of me and I'm sure my whole demeanor changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
sure my body has a visceral reaction that's very relaxed and comfortable. I'm sure that happens. And I wonder, you know, it just, not, you get my head going. See, I wonder wall of threads. I wonder if you just slightly turn your back to those oranges. You know what I mean? Without even thinking about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I would.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a time that I was in the store that I was specifically in the store picking out threads for a pattern, and I knew I needed a sun colored. And so I knew I needed a yellow or an orange for that sun. And I had to look at the options that were there. And it was just like, that was one of the hardest decisions because it just wasn't one that, you know, because there were a handful to choose from and I could have kind of cared less, which one, you know, I had to pick one that would work with the other threads that were part of the design. But, really, it was almost like, okay, any of these will do. Okay, fine, it'll just be that one, you know. Whereas I was very particular about the green and the brown and the others, and you know,
yep.
Yeah.
See, I that's just interesting to me. I think it's everybody has that different approach.
Yep.
And what's your background? And and you know what drives it. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And I mean, and just for you know, it, I think it's interesting to me just because I have such a clear path for mm-hmm. how I feel.
Yes.
I mean, I can define it quite clearly, where for others, I'm sure it's not the case. Mm-hmm. And if you've never had to deal with a color challenge, then because that was when I was in kindergarten, you know, and you had the Crayola 8 crayons. Mm-hmm. Oh, geez, I hated that. And I those, you know, those traumatic experiences that stick with you all the way through your life from childhood. And that was one of them, learning those 8 colors.
Oh,
I mean, it was traumatic for me because it was difficult. And the red and the orange, you know, a little kid, and purple and blue, and I got them screwed up all the time. Aww. And you know, and I just have this perfectionist mentality to me, and it just drove me nuts. It was that, and then I'm left-handed. And when, you know, when learning cursive writing, and of course your pencil has to point over your shoulder.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's all fine and good for you right-handers because you can see what you're writing as your hand moves away from the writing. But for us left-handers, whose hand moves over the writing and smears the pencil, and we can't see what we're writing, then you end up hooking your hand so you can write. And I remember the teacher standing over me time and time again and pulling that pencil and pointing it over my left shoulder. And I, you know, I'm sorry, I can't, it won't work. And so I had to learn to satisfy the requirements. I had to learn to write what I couldn't see. And then the minute I didn't have to do that anymore, that hand got crooked and the pencil got pointed away from me so I could see it. And, you know, but those things stick with you and,
mm-hmm.
and colors.
Yeah. Sticking with you. Yes.
Yeah. And color was the other one. All right. Let's see. One more. Your turn. One more. We got a whole bunch, folks, so we're saving them for the next time.
Okay. Two tips you would share with anyone who will listen.
That's a good one.
Well, you wrote them.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, I've shared this many times. I've shared this many times is to end a session with mid-thread. So you end a session where you do half a stitch and you're on top before you send the needle back to the bottom so that when you come back, you can pick that needle up and go.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is, that's, yep. I share that. I've shared it way too many times. I'm sure people are sick of hearing it. But to me, it just, I sit down and I start stitching instead of getting out a thread, threading a needle, finding a spot on the chart and finding it on the canvas and go. No, I just pick it up and go. And then I'm stitching instead of hunting. And whoever taught me that or suggested that, I think is just one of the best. And then the other one is that there is no, I just do not believe there's any technique that is too difficult if you just make the effort to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you see something you like, I don't care how complex it is, you see something you like, go for it. Take your time, you know, dig in, use a doodle cloth, learn it. It can be learned with good instruction, it can be learned, and we've talked about this 1,000 times, but I just do not believe there's a technique that is so difficult that you can't do it without having done 4 other things ahead of it. Just pick it up and go. If you like it, do it. Okay, those are mine. So what are yours?
Well, your first one was also going to be what I was going to say, because I've also been doing that for a long time, to make sure you finish your stitching session in a way that you will be able to pick up the next time immediately ready to go, like needle ready to go. I mean, I usually try to finish it by starting a new thread and just putting in the first couple of stitches. So yes. I have a good length of thread ready to go.
And it may well have been you that taught me.
Really?
It would not surprise me that it was you. But yeah, I agree. And that's what I do. Start a thread, get 1 or 2 stitches in so I have a good length. So the next session, there's a good bit of stitching before I have to do something else. Yes.
Yep. The other thing that I started doing, I'm trying to think how long ago, and some of it comes out of laziness, but I think it just works really well, is using away knots or waist knots, which prevents me from having to turn over my work. And I start and stop from the top. I just make a knot in the direction that I'm going to be stitching in and make sure to cover up the thread. And then when I get close to that knot, I snip it away and I'm done. And when I'm getting towards the end of the thread, I just pull up, you know, basically in the direction that I know it's going to get covered. And sometimes I need to trim off the end a little bit, but I have drastically reduced the amount of the times that I flip over my, usually I'm working on my score rods, that I have to flip it over. And that just, I don't know, I just have found that to be a much smoother way to stitch for me. It works for me. And I know it doesn't work for everybody. Some people really need to bury their ends in a much neater fashion or really make sure it's covered in a certain way. But that is certainly that that's what works for me. And if I may, I would give a floss tube specific tip to anyone. This is very specific, but anyone who's interested in starting floss tube. And this comes from my own mistake. If you are interested in starting a floss tube check, make sure you start with a fresh account. Do not go to YouTube and say to yourself, oh, wow, I seem to already have a YouTube account. I'll get it connected. Because that means, it's, I believe I'm saying this correctly, it's already associated with your Gmail account that you already own.
Right.
And you've got everything all connected. And what you really want is a brand new account. Because then if you want to call your FlossTube channel anything but your real name, it's going to change your Gmail name. Not your Gmail address, but people are, you know, if you call yourself the Stitching Queen or something like that, people who, you know, you're writing to your business associates or something using your Gmail account, and they're going to see Stitching a Queen or whatever on there. So just start with a fresh account. That's my advice, because the reason why I am Arlene Cohen on FlossTube and not Works by ABC on FlossTube is because I started it with a YouTube-like account that was already created. And I didn't realize that it would be difficult to change it until I already had quite a lot of subscribers when I realized the problem, and I didn't want to start over, so I never did. So that's my very specific floss tube suggestion.
Oh, no, that's and I made that same mistake when I set up the FiberTalk floss tube video, you know, YouTube thing. Was I didn't realize it at the time. My I was logged in to Gmail because our one of my magazines used both magazines use Gmail, but it's Gmail is behind the email address. So yeah. gpar@magazinename.com, but behind that is Gmail. And so then I one day set up the FiberTalk thing, and I was too far down the road when I realized that I was logged in on that machine with my with the magazine name email. And so then that became the master email account for my FiberTalk. And of course, as you know, getting that changed is impossible to virtually impossible. And so then I had to jump through some hoops to add my FiberTalk address as what a co-owner or something like that to get around that. And then I was able to use it. But yeah, I made the same mistake in a different from a different direction, but same problem. You got to start fresh. Log out. Log out of any Gmail that's on your machine and start fresh. Because once you go down that path, it's a pain in the butt.
Well, the thing that amuses me sometimes when people are directing, you know, through a link to my channel, and when you go to like the, not to a specific video, but to my channel, and it all depends on how the link shows up, you sometimes see something that says sixth grade field trip videos. And that's because when I had originally, the only time I had ever used a YouTube thing was it was supposed to be a dumping ground for videos from a sixth grade field trip. Dump your videos so I could download, upload from to another computer. They got downloaded, they got uploaded, they got erased from YouTube. But that thing still existed, and I don't even know how to change that name. So
Every time I see that, I chuckle because I know exactly how you went. Just, and you're not thinking. And you don't think it matters, and it does.
And years later, it comes back to bite you.
Oh, and go back to your second tip, because now I've forgotten, but I wanted to comment on that. What was that about?
using a way knot or waist
Oh,
knot.
yes. Yes, that is, you know, you hit that one so right on, spot on, because I've been working hard, and you know, I say these things and people must think, do you ever stitch just to enjoy it? Because I'm always working on something, but I'm just trying to improve myself. But that's something that I've been working on lately, is eliminating the number of times I have to flip the canvas or flip the scroll rods or whatever to finish off or start a knot. And I agree with you 100%, though, because there are techniques, and there are some people who rarely flip the thing over.
That's me. I rarely.
And it's a training thing, and I think it's worth it, because I've gotten somewhat better at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it because it's a real time saver, because you can just keep churning.
Yep.
And if you have a big project and it's unwieldy, Sarah B being one of them, it's a pain in the butt to flip it over all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, no, pin stitches, way knots, waist knots, any of those things that you can learn to do that begin and end a thread, securely begin and end a thread without having to flip that over, is huge time savings. It doesn't seem like it, but huge time savings.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's a thing. It's a technique and a skill well worth developing, because when I do it and do it right and I'm conscious of it, you just feel like you're really motoring along. And that's a good one. Yep. Okay. We got through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of what, a dozen? Yeah. Okay. The next time we gather, we'll continue.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening. Arlene is at worksbyabc.com and that sixth grade field trip on YouTube. just search for Arlene Cohen on YouTube and subscribe, and you'll find her, because she's the only one. So shows up there. And thanks for listening. Remember, # Fiber Talk Made Me Buy It gets you off the hook. And thanks for listening.
Take care.